This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Marion Brown, Toronto, Canada. The Country of the Pointed Firs by Sarah Orne Jewett. Chapter 17, A Country Road. Whatever doubts and anxieties I may have had about the inconvenience of the Beggs High Wagon for a person of Mrs. Blackett's age and shortness, they were happily overcome by the aid of a chair and her own valiant spirit. Mrs. Todd bestowed great care upon seating us as if we were taking passage by boat, but she finally pronounced that we were properly trimmed. When we had gone only a little way up the hill, she remembered that she had left the house door wide open, though the large key was safe in her pocket. I offered to run back, but my offer was met with lofty scorn, and we lightly dismissed the matter from our minds, until 2 or 3 miles further on we met the doctor, and Mrs. Todd asked him to stop and ask her nearest neighbor to step over and close the door if the dust seemed to blow in the afternoon. "She'll be there in her kitchen. She'll hear you the minute you call. 'Twon't give you no delay," said Mrs. Todd to the doctor. "Yes, Miss Dennett's right there, with the windows all open. It isn't as if my fore-door opened right on the road, anyway," at which proof of composure Mrs. Blackett smiled wisely at me. The doctor seemed delighted to see our guest. They were evidently the warmest friends, and I saw a look of affectionate confidence in their eyes. The good man left his carriage to speak to us, but as he took Mrs. Blackett's hand, he felt it a moment, and as if merely from force of habit, felt her pulse as they talked. Then, to my delight, he gave the firm old wrist a commending pat. "You're wearing well. Good for another 10 years at this rate," he assured her cheerfully, and she smiled back. "I like to keep a strict account of my old standbys." And he turned to me. "Don't you let Mrs. Todd overdo today. Old folks like her are apt to be thoughtless." And then we all laughed, and parting, went our ways gaily. "I suppose he puts up with your rivalry the same as ever?" asked Mrs. Blackett. "You and he are as friendly as ever, I see, Almiry," and Almira sagely nodded. "He's got too many long routes now to stop to tend to all his door patients," she said, "especially them that takes pleasure in talking themselves over. The doctor and me have got to be kind of partners. He's gone a good deal, far and wide. Looked tired, didn't he? I shall have to advise with him and get him off for a good rest. He'll take the big boat from Rockland and go off up to Boston and mouse around among the other doctors, one in 2 or 3 years, and come home fresh as a boy. I guess they think considerable of him up there." Mrs. Todd shook the reins and reached determinedly for the whip, as if she were compelling public opinion. Whatever energy and spirit the white horse had to begin with were soon exhausted by the steep hills and his discernment of a long expedition ahead. We toiled slowly along. Mrs. Blackett and I sat together, and Mrs. Todd sat alone in front, with much majesty and the large basket of provisions. Part of the way the road was shaded by thick woods, but we also passed one farmhouse after another on the high uplands, which we all three regarded with deep interest, the house itself and the barns and garden spots and poultry all having to suffer an inspection of the shrewdest sort. This was a highway quite new to me. In fact, most of my journeys with Mrs. Todd had been made afoot and between the roads, in open pasture lands. My friends stopped several times for brief dooryard visits, and made so many promises of stopping again on the way home that I began to wonder how long the expedition would last. I had often noticed how warmly Mrs. Todd was greeted by her friends, but it was hardly to be compared with the feeling now shown toward Mrs. Blackett. A look of delight came to the faces of those who recognized the plain, dear old figure beside me. One revelation after another was made of the constant interest and intercourse that had linked the far island and these scattered farms into a golden chain of love and dependence. "Now we mustn't stop again if we can help it," insisted Mrs. Todd at last. "You'll get tired, mother, and you'll think the less of reunions. We can visit along here any day. There, if they ain't frying donuts in this next house, too. These are new folks, you know, from over St. George way. They took this old Talcott farm last year. 'Tis the best water on the road, and the check rains come undone. Yes, we'd best delay a little and water the horse. We stopped, and seeing a party of pleasure-seekers in holiday attire, the thin, anxious mistress of the farmhouse came out with wistful sympathy to hear what news we might have to give. Mrs. Blackett first spied her at the half-closed door, and asked with such cheerful directness if we were trespassing that after a few words she went back to her kitchen and reappeared with a plate full of doughnuts. "Entertainment for man and beast," announced Mrs. Todd with satisfaction. "Why, we've perceived there was new doughnuts all along the road, but you're the first that has treated us." Our new acquaintance flushed with pleasure, but said nothing. "They're very nice. You've had good luck with them," pronounced Mrs. Todd. "Yes, we've observed there was doughnuts all the way along. If one house is frying, all the rest is. 'Tis so with a great many things." "I don't suppose likely you're going up to the Bowden reunion?" asked the hostess as the white horse lifted his head and we were saying goodbye. "Why, yes," said Mrs. Blackett and Mrs. Todd and I, all together. "I am connected with the family. Yes, I expect to be there this afternoon. I've been looking forward to it," she told us eagerly. "We shall see you there. Come and sit with us if it's convenient," said dear Mrs. Blackett, and we drove away. "I wonder who she was before she was married," said Mrs. Todd, who was usually unerring in the matters of genealogy. "She must have been one of that remote branch that lived down beyond Thomaston. We can find out this afternoon. I expect that the families'll march together or be sorted out some way. I'm willing to own a relation that has such proper ideas of doughnuts." "I seem to see the family looks," said Mrs. Blackett. "I wish we'd asked her name. She's a stranger, and I want to help make it pleasant for all such." "She resembles Cousin Paulina Bowden about the forehead," said Mrs. Todd with decision. We had just passed a piece of woodland that shaded the road and came out to some open fields beyond, when Mrs. Todd suddenly reined in the horse as if somebody had stood on the roadside and stopped her. She even gave that quick reassuring nod of her head, which was usually made to answer for a bow, but I discovered that she was looking eagerly for a tall ash tree that grew just inside the field fence. "I thought 'twas goin' to do well," she said complacently as we went on again. "Last time I was up this way, that tree was kind of drooping and discouraged. Grown trees act that way sometimes, same's folks. Then they'll put right to it and strike their roots off into new ground and start all over again with real good courage. Ash trees is very likely to have poor spells. They ain't got the resolution of other trees." I listened hopefully for more. It was this peculiar wisdom that made one value Mrs. Todd's pleasant company. "There's sometimes a good hardy tree growing right out of the bare rock, out of some crack that just holds the roots," she went on to say. "Right on the pitch of one of them bare stony hills where you can't seem to see a wheelbarrowful of good earth in a place, but that tree'll keep a green top in the driest summer. You lay your ear down to the ground and you'll hear a little stream running. Every such tree has got its own livin' spring. There's folk made to match 'em." I could not help turning to look at Mrs. Blackett close beside me. Her hands were clasped placidly in their thin black woolen gloves, and she was looking at the flowery wayside as we went slowly along, with a pleased, expectant smile. I do not think she had heard a word about the trees. "I just saw a nice plant of elecampine growing back there," she said presently to her daughter. "I haven't got my mind on herbs today," responded Mrs. Todd in the most matter-of-fact way. "I'm bent on seeing folks," and she shook the reins again. I, for one, had no wish to hurry. It was so pleasant in the shady roads. The woods stood close to the road on the right. On the left were narrow fields and pastures, where there were as many acres of spruces and pines as there were acres of bay and juniper and huckleberry, with a little turf between. When I thought we were in the heart of the inland country, we reached the top of a hill, and suddenly there lay spread out before us a wonderful great view of well-cleared fields that swept down to the wide water of a bay. Beyond this were distant shores, like another country in the midday haze, which half hid the hills beyond, and the faraway pale blue mountains on the northern horizon. There was a schooner with all sails set, coming down the bay from a white village that was sprinkled on the shore, and there were many sailboats flitting about it. It was a noble landscape, and my eyes, which had grown used to the narrow inspection of a shaded roadside, could hardly take it in. "Why, it's the upper bay," said Mrs. Todd. "You can see way over into the town of Fessenden. Those farms way over there are all in Fessenden. Mother used to have a sister that lived up that shore. If we started as early as we could on a summer morning, we couldn't get to her place from Green Island till late afternoon, even with a fair and steady breeze, and you had to strike the time just right so as to fetch up long o' the tide and land near the flood. 'Twas ticklish business, and we didn't visit back and forth as much as mother desired. You have to go way down the coast to Cold Spring Light and round that long point. Up here's what they call the back shore." "No, we were most always separated, my dear sister and me, after the first year she was married," said Mrs. Blackett. "We had our little families and plenty of cares. We were always looking forward to the time we could see each other more. Now and then she'd get out to the island for a few days while her husband'd go fishing, and once he stopped with her and two children and made some flakes right there and cured all his fish for winter. We did have a beautiful time together, sister and me. She used to look back to it long as she lived. I do love to look over there where she used to live," Mrs. Blackett went on as we began to go down the hill. "It seems as if she must still be there, though she's long been gone. She loved their farm. She didn't see how I got so used to our island, but somehow I was always happy from the first." "Yes, it's very dull to me up among those slow farms," declared Mrs. Todd. "The snow troubles 'em in winter. They're all besieged by winter, as you may say. 'Tis far better by the shore than up among such places. I never thought I should like to live up country." "Why, just see the carriages ahead of us in the next rise," exclaimed Mrs. Blackett. "There's going to be a great gathering. Don't you believe there is, Almiry? It hasn't seemed up to now as if anybody was going but us. And 'tis such a beautiful day, with yesterday cool and pleasant, to work and get ready. I shouldn't wonder if everybody was there, even the slow ones, like Phoebe Ann Brock." Mrs. Blackett's eyes were bright with excitement, and even Mrs. Todd showed remarkable enthusiasm. She hurried the horse and caught up with the holiday makers ahead. "There's all the Deptfords goin', 6 in the wagon," she told us joyfully, "and Miss Alva Tilly's folks are now risin' the hill in their own new carryall." Mrs. Blackett pulled at the neat bow of her black bonnet strings and tied them again with careful precision. "I believe your bonnet's on a little bit sideways, dear," she advised Mrs. Todd as if she were a child, but Mrs. Todd was too much occupied to pay proper heed. We began to feel a new sense of gaiety and of taking part in the great occasion as we joined the little train. End of Chapter 17, A Country Road.